This is The Waycast is a podcast where we recap every Star Wars episode as it's releasing on Disney Plus. This is your spoiler alert, and you have been warned. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of This is The Waycast, the Mandalorian edition. I'm Sarah Edwards, the resident Star Wars writer at Boardwalk Times.
And I'm Giovanni Delgadillo, a columnist and podcaster at Boardwalk Times.
And I'm Zach Perlstein, the editor-in-chief at the Boardwalk Times.
All right, so we are coming up on the end of season three. It's the second to last episode of The Mandalorian. Now, I'm going to be in the minority here. I thought the episode was fine. The beginning, big reveal, which we were anticipating. We were anticipating Moff Gideon to come back. Not surprising. We were anticipating what's her name to be working with Gideon. Not surprising. And yeah, it's kind of been like, to me, it felt like every attempt to retake Mandalore, but that's just me.
Very good points there. I actually didn't even think about that. My line of thinking is more, the more you think about the episode, the more you realize that they follow the same formula every season, except a different person gets captured each time, and that there's always a different, a big death scene. But I really enjoyed the episode for what it was. I'm actually like kind of surprised it took this long for them to get the ball rolling on the plot again. But then you remember, like I said, the other seasons do the same thing. So it's like not a surprise, but there was so much going on that it kind of like blew my mind at points, because there's a lot. There's a lot here that you a few years ago would have never thought would happen in live action or any of this. So I thought it was really cool.
I thought it was really cool as well. But I do think you had this episode title called The Spies. And from my understanding, we only saw one spy within this episode, Aaya Kane. So yeah. Kind of opens up this question heading into the finale. Who was that second spy? Because there's some shady business going on within, I don't know if it's within the Mandalorian camp or somewhere else, but something is happening, because just how this episode played out, it was definitely a setup. Once we get on to later in the episode, it just felt like a setup.
Yeah, and I think that's my gripe too, is it's like, you know, the episode title set up that we were going to find out what is going to stop the Mandalorians from taking Mandalore. Like, I feel like the whole season has alluded to, yeah, we got to go get Mandalore, we got to go do it. And to me, it's just felt too easy. So the fact that now we actually have a really difficult conflict on the second to last episode that's revealed just felt so late. Like, and I think that's why it felt so underwhelming to me. Like, this should have been established earlier on in the season, like at least maybe scenes with Gideon coming up with the plan and just how he's been retaking Mandalore. I would have loved more of that, like how this came to be, because the way the Empire has worked, it's like, oh, big reveal, they still have ships, they still have a base. Like, it's so fast that it just feels weird.
And this one in particular feels really weird, because it's like Mandalore having TIE interceptors, and it's like what you said, Sarah, it's like it is kind of getting weird with this whole, the Empire has a ship, it has this fleet, it's like they're like reload it constantly. And obviously in this episode, in the first 7 minutes, we get to see the Shadow Council mm-hmm. in live action, which is basically Operation Cinder, or whatever you would call it, like Palpatine's like contingency plan, so to speak, with all these Empire loyalists. And I guess like that kind of gives you insight on like how they're keeping strong. But then again, it's like, you're so right with it's like, it feels like they just like, it almost is getting to a point where it's like, did Return of the Jedi even matter?
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's like, where did these people come from? How did they set up? Like, they just are there. And that, I think that's why a lot of people have gripes with the sequel. It's like, they're just there.
That's all good points. Cause like, if you think about it, the Imperial remnants that are in this, like the Shadow Council or whatever, this is something that people who've read the books are like kind of worried about. Not complaining about, they're a little bit worried that they're not going to acknowledge the what Zach just mentioned, Operation Cinder, which is specifically to destroy all remnants of the Empire that had nothing to do with the First Order, because the entire point was to revive the Empire as the First Order and make it its own thing with like the top executives. Essentially, it's like, oh, we got defeated really hard, so let's get rid of all the like worst parts of us and pretend that we're weak while we're actually really strong the entire time, which you kind of see in this episode, but
that's true.
If we go to this opening scene, there is something very specific going on that they allude to, and then it pays off at the end of the episode, which is that Moff Gideon kind of wants to be his own thing. Like, I think he wants to be the Emperor, and that's what's going on. So there's a lot of people saying this, and I think it's true, where he's like, oh, Thrawn sucks. Like, I'm so much better than him, where I'm like, I don't think he realizes like what he's getting into. Cause the thing is, Thrawn is like, me and Zach were talking about this because we got to talk about it. We talk to death on every Mando Waycast about a big Endgame style Filoni movie, which is exactly what got announced at Celebration, that combines all the shows that they're doing right now into a big thing. And the thing is, Thrawn being the villain is literally like Thanos in Marvel, and they both start with TH. So it's like, what better character to pick for that? So essentially having Gideon without his mustache for some reason, rest in peace, come out here and say like, oh, I'm so much better than everyone, and that's why I need all these supplies, while in reality Thrawn is like out in the middle of nowhere doing who knows what, amassing what I assume is going to be a fleet, because from my understanding he destroyed the New Republic in the original Thrawn trilogy from the 90s by not even like making like this giant army. He was just so smart that he attacked their fleets with like a couple capital ships, not even like a full fleet of capital ships, and demolished them. So I think that's kind of what they're alluding to, is that they're like, they say like, we can't show our forces, we have to pretend that we're like weak or whatever. And so that's why it's kind of jarring that they do have so much stuff, where it's like, I have a million TIE interceptors just hiding out here. Now I do think it is a really good twist that Moff Gideon happens to be on Mandalore. I thought that was pretty smart, because I had no idea that was coming, where it's like, oh, he's been here literally the entire time. I think it would have been a bit stronger if that wasn't something that just kind of happens off screen, where it's like, okay, Moff Gideon's going to prison. Oh, just kidding. No, he wasn't going to go to prison. Because like in the first season, the fake out is he died, which everyone knew he wasn't going to die. And then he comes out and shows the Darksaber, and it's like a big deal. So that's something that people have complained about. It's like things from season two being undone in order to like basically do kind of the same thing. But I guess we'll see with the finale. I still hold true to my prediction that me and Zach made a few episodes ago, that the finale is not going to be as hopeful or like rewarding as the other two seasons. I feel like it's going to end on like a darker note, and they're going to be out for revenge or something.
I think that the finale is going to actually end similar to how this episode ended. It's ending with,
I can see it.
It's ending with a defeat. It's ending with something that is going to, it's going to suck the air out of you for a bit, but I think they're going to do it with the specific reasoning of, they know Ahsoka's coming in August, so they can get away with maybe a more, not to use too many more Marvel references on our Star Wars podcast, but maybe an Infinity War style ending for the Mandalorian season 3, so we can, you know, prolong this for season 4.
Yeah, absolutely. Giovanni, I want to go back on a point you were saying about how so much of this happened off screen. So at first I was thinking, why is Gideon on Mandalore of all planets? But somehow he knows that the Mandalorians think that Mandalore is cursed, so they're not going to go back there. It sets up the perfect precedent of him to establish this army. But it would have been cool to see that, him being like, ah, you think Mandalore is cursed and you don't plan on going back there anytime soon. Like, seeing some kind of like strategy there would have been cool. Like, I get the suspense and everything to like build up like, oh my gosh, the sense of defeat, but it's just, I feel like it just leaves so many holes. And going on another point about how you talk about, you know, we know Thrawn is coming and Gideon think he's the full thing, I have a question to pose for y'all. So the Ahsoka show, Ahsoka's main focus is Thrawn. Her main focus is finding Thrawn. Who do you think the main villain in this end film is going to be? Do you think that Ahsoka is going to find Thrawn and he's somehow going to escape again and he's the main villain? Or is she going to kill Thrawn? We reveal that Gideon is actually the main one that she needs to attack, and Gideon's the main villain.
I'm going to be honest. I think Gideon is screwed. Like, that's what I think. Mostly because I have a hunch that Ahsoka's not going to end very well either. Like,
that was my next guess. So is Thrawn, so Ahsoka just ends with Thrawn living, and what was the point?
Yeah, I think he's gonna like, man, this is like future prediction, because I'm like, I already know that Thrawn is such a big deal, and I kind of know like where they might take his story if they follow the old novels. I know like how they end. I kind of feel like Gideon is a good villain, but I think he's specifically a villain towards the Mandalorians, and his like grab for power is the typical Imperial like, oh, I'm so invincible, invincible. Like, he says it himself. He wants to make a super army of like force sensitive, like Mandalorian super soldiers, essentially. I mean, that's kind of that's very Marvel-esque in a way, but that's besides the point. The point is he has his own like ideas, but I think he's a little bit too like self-confident, whereas Thrawn doesn't have self-confidence. He just has like his intelligence to lean back on. True. And that's why I think having Gideon like cast aside, like, well, we didn't even talk about it yet because we're like discussing so much other stuff, but
my bad.
No, you're good, because Gilad Paleon, Captain Paleon from the Thrawn novels, is finally in live action. Apparently, I'd forgotten about this. He got a voice cameo at the end of Rebels, which I completely like forgot about.
Wow.
So it's like kind of crazy that the casting is literally like, as soon as I saw him, it hit me that I was like for a second, I was like, why does this guy look familiar? And then I started thinking, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Are they actually doing that? And then as soon as they said, oh, Paleon, I was like, whoa, okay. And so Paleon, you know, talking crap to like Gideon about like, you're, you know, pushing it a bit. I think that's very much a sign that Thrawn is a much bigger threat than any of these guys realize.
And to just answer your question, Sarah, I do think, I agree with you. I do think it's Thrawn in the end, because I think what's going to happen in Ahsoka is I think we're going to start with Ahsoka going after Thrawn, but I think that Baylan and Baylan's apprentice, like the recently revealed Sith kind of villain characters, they're not quite Sith, but they're dark Jedi, or I don't even know. Like, they're going to end up becoming the main antagonists, and then Morgan Elsbeth, like all those kind of side characters are going to come to the forefront, because they're going to like kind of be the pawns in front of Thrawn. But I do feel like in Ahsoka, we are going to get Ezra back. I think that's going to be the big reveal. But my biggest prediction is that I think Moff Gideon isn't going to actually get killed by like Mando or Bo-Katan. He's going to get killed by Thrawn.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
I think that makes sense.
I think they save that for the Mandoverse film. I think that'll be the first 5 minutes of the Mandoverse film will be Moff Gideon, who we've spent by that time probably like years with, just getting killed. It'll be like his Loki moment or whatever. Like, it's just gonna be like that just big moment. But like, yeah, that's to answer your question, Sarah, is that I do think Thrawn is going to be the big bad of this entire Mandoverse. But then again, I don't know, they could do
it's a
Snoke
toss-up for sure.
They could do a Snoke. I mean, ooh, heck, Snoke could end up being the villain of this too. I mean, it could be Palpatine's messed up clone. I mean, I don't know. I just think the amount of fan backlash they would get if we end up seeing like Grand Admiral Thrawn after all this time being hyped up on all of our podcasts getting killed by Moff Gideon. I don't even want to think about it, because like the backlash would be just insane, and it would be probably a new sort of mutated backlash we have never seen from the Star Wars fandom before. And that's something that's even crazy to think about, because there's already been enough backlashes with way minor stuff.
Absolutely. I want to touch on another part of this episode that is one of the big things, is that the Mandalorian, two big Mandalorian factions who have hated each other for so long, have come together to fight this one cause. I loved these scenes, but I didn't like that we gloss over everything Mandalore lore that happened in the Clone Wars and Rebels. We are not giving that storyline its justice, because it really would help explain so much, and we're just forgetting about it.
Wouldn't it help after the end of the Mandalorian episodes, instead of Disney Plus being like, hey, you should watch Andor, shouldn't it be Clone Wars or Rebels? Like,
yes,
every week
100%.
And I don't get, why does Andor pop up afterwards? I get it's the latest Star Wars series besides Mandalorian, but like, to me, it makes no like story sense. And like, Disney Plus usually is very story intuitive of like, if you watch WandaVision, then they're gonna be like, oh, well, then you need to watch Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Like, yeah, it predicts your viewership more. And I'm just shocked.
I think they're
with
trying
the
to segment live action to live action and animated to animated, which
makes
we're
no
quickly
sense.
Getting to the point where you can't stick with one or the other.
So it's funny, because because I've actually seen a lot of people on social media saying they're either rewatching Rebels or watching it for the first time. Like, I know Zach just started watching it, and it's really interesting to hear their perspective, because I'm like expecting some of them to hate it, and everyone's like, wow, I didn't realize this show was actually really good. And I'm like, yeah, I know, I've been saying that for a long time, like you didn't have to tell me, like so no, but you're right. It is kind of weird to just redo it. I do think though, and we did get this in a flashback sequence, the context of the Night of a Thousand Tears does add like some interesting lore, because it's like, when you think about it from a logical perspective, Mandalorians banding together right before A New Hope and then never showing up to help the rebellion doesn't really make sense. Like,
not at all.
Yeah.
And another gripe is like going into the Night of a Thousand Tears, or even the scene where Bo-Katan and Din are talking on that ship. Din doesn't understand that these factions don't like each other. He doesn't understand fully the significance of Mandalore. And I feel like this would have been a great time for Bo to say, you know, yes, we rebuild. My sister tried to do that, and this is how we got here, because I didn't believe in her way. Like, we always say we've tried to rebuild and it's crumbled, but we never explain why. But we know why, because of Clone Wars and Rebels, because it's happened so many times before. But Lucasfilm was like, oh, I don't remember. I didn't write that. Wasn't me.
So that was actually a point I was going to bring up earlier, whenever we were talking about the opening scene, because what was I going to say? Dave Filoni specifically, I don't think this is a John Favreau, well, mix of both of them. They kind of like to take things from the books and the comics. This has nothing to do with the animated series yet, and kind of appropriate them for live action. So it's like, live action is like the biggest canon of them all, and the animated shows are like right next to that, but they like to not contradict them, just kind of like make it more accessible because more people watch live action. And so what's happening is, for example, we didn't even talk about Brendel Hux, Armitage Hux's father. So he's General Hux's father. Like, his father is in the episode played by Brian Gleason, so Donald Gleason's brother, which I thought was really cool. I thought that was like, that blew my mind, because I'm not gonna lie to you guys, I actually did get spoiled that Hux was in the episode, but I got spoiled the other way. I thought it was him. I thought it was Armitage.
You thought it was Damal.
Yeah. So I thought he was going to be in it. And so when I watched the episode, like, I was actually surprised that it wasn't. That was the only spoiler I had read, like, coming out of Celebration, and it was by complete accident. And so I was like, whoa, Hux is in this? Like, this is crazy. Then you realize, wait, Hux would have been like a child. So it doesn't make any sense. Like,
yeah.
So anyways, the point is that him showing up, he's a book character. So it's like, some people are like, okay, well, where's Rey Sloane, who's also a Grand Admiral, just like Thrawn, except her book trilogy that is canon takes place right around this time period, if I'm not mistaken. It's either then or like right before The Force Awakens. I can't really remember. I didn't read the books. All I know is like partially the lore, and that Rey Sloane is also as threatening as Thrawn, which is why some people are like, where is she? Why isn't she being mentioned at this meeting? So I'm like, there are parts here and there that they're clearly like about. So with the animated shows, this is something we talked about last week, was they kind of like seem to be not recontextualizing, but like retelling bits and pieces of the animated shows to fit this series. Like, I think in Ahsoka, they're not just going to like reiterate, oh, this is what happened in Rebels, for all those people who, you know, don't remember or didn't watch it. I think it's going to be more like, it's obvious in the trailer, because we can talk about that because there's a trailer, that Sabine has been out of the Mandalorian game for a long time. And the epilogue to Rebels, spoiler alert, this isn't really that spoilery, but at the epilogue to Rebels, they show Sabine with her short hair again, and she's touching this mural, and her and Ahsoka are about to go on this big adventure. So my assumption is that Ahsoka the series is going to fill in the gap before that, so it's not people immediately jumping into the show and being like, who are these people and why are they in this adventure? I think that's a smart way to do it, is be like, that epilogue, it was already obvious that it took place in the future, because like a lot had changed, and obviously that was like a flash forward past Rebels, because Rebels ends like before A New Hope. So I think that's kind of what they're doing with this whole Mando storyline, by having Bo-Katan finally be like the leader character. And like you said, we don't have any like of the previous context explained, except for the Night of a Thousand Tears. It's like the only tidbit of lore that's specific to the Mandalorian that they're going into. That and the Darksaber, I'm glad we finally got context on that. People have been asking for years how Gideon got it, and I think them explaining that it was like Bo-Katan's sacrifice to try and save her people makes way too much sense. It explains explains a lot more about her character in between Rebels and now.
Quick question for both you, Gio, and Sarah. The Night of the Thousand Tears and like the Purge on Mandalore, just so I have this like correct in my head, because I don't think the show has done a good enough job of explaining the timeline to the more casual viewer. Was the Night of a Thousand Tears, did that take place before A New Hope?
It definitely took place, to be honest, I really don't know, because
I'm very confused on
Mandalorian is the first time that they've brought in the Night of a Thousand Tears. Like, it took me a second to realize what she was talking about, because we really haven't given a name to the Purge of Mandalore until this episode.
And I didn't know if it was like after Return of the Jedi or something either, like, because that's when the Mandalorian takes place. So it gets kind of confusing. These are like, okay, so when
they just
did
don't
this
talk about
place?
It very much.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, because I thought about it, and if the Death Star and the other one hadn't been blown up, that's probably what they would have done. They would have just demolished Mandalore completely. But it's obvious that this was like either before the Death Star or after it, obviously, because the Death Star only blew up one planet, and then the Death Star 2 didn't even get to blow up any planets. So I'm thinking that you guys are right. It's like weird timeline wise. That's why I'm like, the fact that she said it was after she had the Darksaber, and I pointed out earlier how the Mandalorians never helped on the war against the Empire, it makes me think that it was right before A New Hope, and that the Mandalorians just split across the galaxy completely, and they just like didn't help anyone, and they were just lost, and they didn't know what they were doing. I think that would make sense. I want to say it was like after Rebels, because I looked up the timeline specifically. I don't see an exact date on the Night of a Thousand Tears, but it says that she got the Darksaber in 2 BBY, which is two years before the Battle of Yavin, so before the Death Star, basically. So I want to say maybe that's the time period, and I feel like I'm completely wrong, but
I mean, they don't make it easy on us. Like, I definitely would have liked if we at least saw more on the Night of a Thousand Tears. It's something that's more of talked about in words. All that we've really seen is the one scene or so where we see Mandalore getting exploded. We don't really see it that much. So it's really hard, whether you've seen Clone Wars or the animated shows or not, it's just kind of hard to picture what happened. Like, for Giovanni and I, because we know what Mandalore looked like before this purge and before the original series, it's just like, God, they flattened that. Whereas like for a casual viewer, it's like, this could have been what Mandalore looked like before. It's just kind of, it's a weird transition.
And that's the problem. And I think it's a problem that has plagued this season of The Mandalorian, is that you brought up a great point. It's just like, there is a lot of telling, not a lot of showing. But then there's also with this Mandalore issue, is you're right. For people who didn't watch Clone Wars or Rebels, how don't we know that Mandalore wasn't a dump? Because on this season of The Mandalorian, we really haven't been to that many creatively designed planets. I mean,
not at
thankfully,
all.
The Jack Black and Lizzo episode, we got an Epcot-inspired planet with people movers and monorails and like crazy designs. But like outside of Coruscant and, you know, the new age version of Nuvaro, I mean, we really are not like, it's usually like the Mandalorian camp that they were at was boring visually. It was just like an island. I mean, it really has been dire of like, you know, thankfully we have had Coruscant this season, because if we haven't, like, we're not exploring other planets. I mean, hey, everyone's always like complaining about the Mandalorian doing fan service. Well, I'm going to ask Favreau and Filoni to do us one better for season 4. I want planet service next season.
Yeah.
I don't even care. Give us Hoth. Give us Endor. Give us Naboo. You know, give us Batuu. Like, I mean, I don't really care. Just give us all the planets. I don't care if the people on the internet are like, oh, you guys are fanboys and stuff. I don't care. I just want visually fun planets again.
You know, this is why I miss Bad Batch, because we went to so many cool different places. Everyone who's listening to me on this pod is probably sick of me saying this, but I miss Bad Batch for so many of these reasons. Like, yeah, I'll stop.
I was going to say, it's funny, Zach, because you remember a few episodes ago, I had mentioned that something that Disney Star Wars, like, well, not Disney Star Wars, but ever since they bought Lucasfilm, has been consistent in is the art style. They've managed to make Star Wars stay looking like Star Wars, and they've done a good job of keeping Doug Chang on, for one. He's, like, been a great purveyor of Star Wars art ever since the prequels, and he, like, does an excellent job modernizing the, you know, the Macquarie paintings and stuff, and they've also taken from that and, you know, reappropriated it for various things. But the one thing I mentioned that I corrected myself on before I could finish talking about that, because I was talking about like the monster designs and stuff, is the planets. Like before I could finish saying how, like praising how good a job they've done at making all the animals and creatures look like they fit in Star Wars, I was like, wait a minute, the planet. Because like all the planets have been boring deserts, forests, and like maybe an ice tundra occasionally, but they never look alien enough. And then we have Coruscant, which is a classic planet, which didn't even show up in the sequels. They didn't even show it in the sequels, which I think now they're overcompensating for by having it in every single show. But it's a good thing because it's a great planet. Like I cannot complain. Everyone has agreed that it's showing up this many times is a good thing. It's shown up in Andor, Bad Batch, The Mandalorian. It's shown up a lot, basically, is what I'm saying. So I feel like that's a good thing, but you're right. It's like, okay, kind of whatever. I will say I do like the look. This is gonna sound like kind of bad in a way, but I don't mean it this way. I really like the way Mandalore looks, like emerald, just completely glassed, like laser beamed, which is kind of Halo-esque. In Halo, there's like glassing planets. So I think that was kind of cool that we get to see that from a visual perspective. You see these emeralds all over the place and these caves and stuff. I think that's pretty unique. Like I'm not saying that screw the old Mandalore, this looks better. Like, no, I just think it's a cool way to visualize how destroyed it is instead of making it just a generic post-apocalyptic scenario. It's like, no, it was post-apocalyptic and it's like all green now. Like it's completely gone. So I kind of like that aesthetic that they're going for, especially with the shots of all the Mandalorians being reflected in the ground. I think that's really creative. I really like that.
I guess it would have been cool if we at least got to see Sundari destroyed.
Oh, you know what I
mean? Because Sundari is what everybody is used to, for at least for animated. For people who have seen Clone Wars, we've seen Sundari. That's where we would go. That's the Mandalore that we associate the visuals looking like. So we've never really seen the ground or what is beyond the clouds. So it is really cool, but I think if we had some kind of revelation where it's like, oh, this is what Mandalore looks like. They're very tossed up, which I love anything to do with Mandalore. So like, I have such strong feelings about all of this. But
no, yeah, that makes sense.
I just like Duchess Satine and Obi-Wan, but...
So I guess if we go back to like what was going on, there are a lot, like I said, there's way too much like stuff that happened in this episode that I was like, whoa, because here's another thing. When they landed on Mandalore, I was completely shocked to see that we got not one, but two Breaking Bad actors as Mandalorians. And then we got, I'm blanking on his name, but we had a third, their leader, who was just in Top Gun Maverick as one of the
Charles
admirals.
Parnell.
Yes.
Charles
Thank
Parnell.
You. Was, I was gonna say Barnell. Yeah,
he was a great, I think his call sign in Top Gun was Warlock. I mean,
that's awesome.
He was great in Top Gun.
Star-studded cast this season, at least. Like, we've really brought in some big guns for this season. I mean, the fact that they got Lizzo, amazing, which I elaborated a lot last
episode,
so I will stop, but I literally could not have picked anybody better.
I just wanted to say that my man Charles Baker, he's the skinny Pete from Breaking Bad. I have not seen him in anything since El Camino, which was a Breaking Bad movie. And apparently, just like Lizzo, he's a big fan of the show. Like, not too long ago on his birthday, he wore like a Grogu onesie. And someone on Twitter said, oh, I feel like you're going to be in The Mandalorian. And then, and then a few weeks later, he starts tweeting about how he's in the episode. And I'm like, honestly, what a cool turn for this guy. Like I said, I have not seen him in anything. He's not like a main character in Breaking Bad, but he's still a really memorable one. So getting him, the other Breaking Bad actor, even less relevant in a way, character wise in Breaking Bad, he's one of the henchmen for the big bad guy in the last season. And I didn't know this until someone pointed it out to me. So I'm like, oh, they got two Breaking Bad guys like at the last second. So that's pretty cool. And I like that Charles Parnell gets to be like the leader, and he gets to talk to Bo-Katan about like, oh, we always survive, like regardless of what they push at us, like we don't surrender. And then obviously she tells them the lore of like, well, you see, no, about surrendering. So yeah, I thought that was really cool. The ship design was cool too, like the literal pirate ship essentially. I thought that was really neat. This is because I pirate ship, my mind just connected. Going back to the conversation with Gideon, this is something that makes sense now, but I still think the way it was presented earlier in the story is stupid. And that was Gorian Shard attacking Navarro seemingly just cause, but then Carson T was like, I think it's the Empire, instead of just being like, dude, it's literally an unprotected planet in the middle of nowhere. Of course there's going to be pirates. Like, I still don't know why they wrote in like Carson Teva being so crazy smart that suddenly he knows that it's related to the Empire somehow. I'm like, firstly, what does the Empire have on Navarro that they need so badly? Like, clearly they do have something. We know now that Gideon wanted to destroy Navarro for a particular reason. We don't know why, but I still think it's a dumb plot point. We didn't need to see this scene where he tells the New Republic, I think there's some Empire activity out there, guys. I think that's what's going on. I'm just like Columbo over here. I figured it out on like a hunch, basically. I'm like, that's the one thing I'm like, okay, that's kind of dumb, but at least now we have confirmation, the obvious confirmation that that's true. So I want to know why he wanted Navarro. Maybe they'll explain that next episode. I like that the mystery on the cloning and stuff is kind of being lifted, and it's like, okay, so we also get a name for Palpatine's situation, Project Necromancer. It's like, okay, that's obviously has to do with Snoke and Palpatine, but Gideon's entire story with Pershing is so separate, which is exactly why he had him killed. I think that's a really cool way to like split the storylines and be like, this Mandalorian cloning plot that's been going on is technically related to Palpatine, but it's also its own thing within the show. I think that's a good way to like delegate different parts of the story.
And one thing I just want to add it on to your point about the cloning and Snoke and Palpatine is that over during Star Wars Celebration, Andy Serkis, I believe, basically came out and said that Snoke's relationship with Palpatine was like father and son, which makes no sense, but I'm starting to think I smell a retcon coming.
Now that you say that,
that's how he said it. Like, I do think that, you know, Rey's parents and stuff, they're all gonna just kind of with the Mandalorian, I think, did the sequels a solid. I think they're gonna come out and just be like, they were all clones, and like, you know, they finally didn't make Palpatine until Rise of Skywalker, but like Snoke wasn't Palpatine. Like, they're gonna kind of change that up. I mean, they'll still say Snoke was the antagonist, but you know, Palpatine was still waiting in the wings or something. I don't know, but that triggered the thought while you were talking about the cloning theories.
So something about that makes me add it on to Thrawn. Yet again, we have arrived at Thrawn as the topic, is the fact that Snoke in the current canon came from the unknown regions, which is exactly where Thrawn is right now, which is exactly where these warlords are kind of seemingly hiding out, I'd assume, specifically this cloning going on with Hux, considering that his son is like essentially first or second in command of the First Order. I want to say that's where they're hiding. That's why I think that all makes sense to me, and I like that they're building up to like this Palpatine thing. The only thing that will never make sense, and I don't think they can justify too much, is the Sith Eternal, aka the Final Order fleet coming out of nowhere with Death Star tech. I think that was a little bit too ridiculous, and they won't be able to explain that. Be like, oh yeah, so this entire time that the, you know, Empire was rebuilding, you know, with like Thrawn and stuff, and they're like, oh, we're coming back and we're gonna, you know, defeat the New Republic because they're stupid or whatever. I do think that's the one thing that's too far-fetched. It's like, okay, it makes sense to have little ships here and there, like, oh, we have TIE interceptors and we have like these other things that we haven't gone to yet, and we're gonna like build this all out, and we have secret cloning facilities in the outer, like in the expanded unknown regions, and clearly that's where Thrawn and Ezra have been this entire time, and Ezra is the lost one, whereas Thrawn is in hiding. So it's like, what are they doing with Snoke there? Because like I said, Snoke came from the unknown regions, his entire backstory is shrouded in mystery. So it's like father and son, I think that's just Andy Serkis like making stuff up, because he used to say really crazy stuff about Snoke in the marketing.
So it's like, give him credit though. You know, gotta do something. I mean, they'd also, him and I think the actress who played Captain Phasma were joking that they should have a Phasma Snoke Disney Plus series.
Oh yeah, Gwendolyn Christie.
Just to kind of, you know, a comeback series. That's what they were saying, like they should just come back. And I'm like, yeah, maybe.
That would be interesting. I will say, the more in the weeds we get when it does come to Snoke, it makes me confused. So fun fact, I've only seen the sequel movies once. I really didn't rewatch them. I saw them once and it was like, okay. So go, like, you know, we're starting to trek into an area of Star Wars that I'm so unfamiliar with, which is a good thing. But at the same time, it's also like, is this going to make sense to those who have not like followed that closely with the sequels. Like I can see it, like it's great that we're exploring this territory, but my worry is that it's just going to become too confusing and that they're just going to retcon, like you were saying, Zach. I sense that the sequels are just going to be retconned. I think we've heard hints about it here and there many times. I think that's where they're going to go.
Bits and pieces I think will be retconned, but yeah. I think the reason why we are getting this Dave Filoni Mandoverse Endgame film is so at the end of the day people will always get their true Star Wars sequel, their episode 6.5, so to speak. Like people are going to get that, and then these sequels, which will, you know, I'll say it right here on the podcast, these sequels in 10 years when we're all old in 2029, there's going to be a whole generation of fans that are going to be like, well, you know, man, Finn was so much better than whoever, or like, and they're going to be like, you know, Poe Dameron could destroy Han Solo in Kessel Run, or you know, there's gonna be like people are gonna fall in love with the sequels. And but I do think the Mandalorian kind of has this weight on its shoulder right now, where it's like, and me and Gio talked about it on the last pod I was on, where it's like you have these characters that were like kind of minor within the sequel trilogy, like Laura Dern's character Admiral Holdo, that it's like I told him, it's like at some point she's gonna have to show up in the Mandoverse, because I mean,
yeah,
you can't, like, you know, there's a lot of characters in the sequel trilogy that they made important that now they're gonna have to kind of justify the importance.
Yeah, for sure.
Sounds familiar, huh? Sounds kind of like what they did with the Clone Wars, and kind of like what they're doing with Mon Mothma and Cassian Andor on Andor. This is very much in Star Wars's wheelhouse, and that's what's hilarious to me is like people that want the sequels completely gone, and they think that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau somehow are like completely erasing them, which is exactly like the opposite of what's happening. Because I mean, as we just said, there are mentions of characters like Hux and clones and Project Necromancer. So it's like the question is, what are they going to change or like recontextualize? Because in the Clone Wars, they recontextualized a ton of stuff. For example, Dooku fighting Anakin multiple times, but then Anakin getting beaten every time so that in episode 3, he finally triumphs. Or like General Grievous never meeting Anakin because their first meeting is at the beginning of episode 3. So I think that's what they're going to do, is they're going to recontextualize certain like lines and things to make sure that it all fits, while also like moving things around. But in the purpose of like this episode, for example, I think we should just cut to the chase. We get the Praetorian guards, except they're like primitive, and I thought that was really cool. Like that was, for me at first when they first showed up, I was like, I knew that they were coming. Like this is another thing I had spoiled to me over a year ago. It was leaked on Bespin Bulletin that the Praetorian guards were going to show up and they were going to look slightly different. And when they showed up, I thought they were purge troopers from Fallen Order. And I think that's a really cool thing that they're doing, is you can technically say these are purge troopers, but they're upgraded because they're already wearing First Order armor. Like their literal chest plate is just a red First Order stormtrooper chest plate. And their weapons, instead of being the red energy like the actual Praetorian guards in The Last Jedi, they're purple like the purge troopers. So I thought that was a really cool way to, like, you just blended three different eras of Star Wars in one thing, and that was really cool. And what I thought was even freaking cooler than that, and those were already like peak cool, was Moff Gideon himself and his Imperial Super Commando like Mandalorians. I thought that was like, because we got the Imperial Super Commandos in Rebels. We had talked about this on the episode where Carson Teva's like, oh, there's Beskar alloy in the ship. It's like, oh, so Gideon got rescued by like basically his own people, because they're using Beskar and they've been using Beskar. So it has nothing to do with any of our conspiracy theories, which there is still conspiracy theories. There are still two characters here that may line up with the spies title. But specifically, you have these Imperial Super Commandos that their design is like a mix of the First Order, mix of the Mandalorian Super Commandos from Rebels, and then a little bit of some other stuff. So I thought that was really cool to see them there represented. They almost feel like proto Captain Phasma's in a way, because her armor is practically Beskar without being Beskar, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know. I thought they were cool. It's like you have all these new action figures essentially, and in the concept art for the episode, the Super Commandos from Rebels were the ones they used, because obviously the costumes hadn't been finalized. So it's like, yeah, that's clearly what they were modeled after. And I don't know. I think it's really cool that they're making these connections this far ahead, while like also honoring the other things before. So it's like all the things that you knew from the Empire are evolving, which, as we're seeing in the Bad Batch, we're seeing the opposite of that, where we're seeing the pre-Empire like TK troopers that look like Ralph McQuarrie's original art for the stormtroopers evolving into the Empire we know in the original trilogy, which is now evolving into the First Order. I think that's pretty cool that they even managed to pull that off. Like, I saw some really cringy reactions to people when they saw the Praetorian Guards, because everyone like was like, oh crap, and they like, you know, they kill Paz Vizsla, rest in peace. He kind of stupidly left his son behind, but whatever, I guess. Self-sacrifice.
That part was really sad. Again, yeah. We always have a dramatic death leading in, either leading into the finale or at the finale. Yep. And it just, his, I will say, didn't hit as hard as I wish it did. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
This was not Quill.
Yeah.
I give him his flowers, though, because as people who've been listening to This Is the Way cast all season, I've been ripping on him as a character.
True.
Like, all season. Like, yeah. Nonstop. Like, I've been like, I don't get why he has like, I think in one episode with Giovanni, Sarah, I was like, I don't know why this guy gets this amount of time to speak. Like,
I get that 100%.
You know, I was like, that what frustrated makes him significant? With it. I was like, what? Because he's bulkier? Like, what's going on?
Also,
like,
why is he bulkier? Why is his armor thicker? Is he a guard? Like, is he a lead guard? He's not the armorer.
You know, it's like, I want to know when Paz Vizsla's toys come out. I want Disney Consumer Products to release their sales report, because if Paz Vizsla has like better toy sales, then we'll be like, mission accomplished, they did their job. But if he doesn't, I'm gonna chalk this up to a big L on the Mandalorian's part. But my quick kind of really rogue opinion here, as we transition to the rest of this episode and like topics, is that with the spies title that Giovanni pointed out and what you pointed out, Sarah, it's like, you know, the spies, it's like we have Aliyah Kane. I mean, this is going to sound a little nuts and stuff. And, you know, this theory only came into my head this morning because I actually read about it online. You know, I'm not going to take this as credit as my own theory. I read about it online, but then I start thinking about it. I'm like, okay, this makes some sense. And it would justify a lot of things. Do we think the armorer is working with Moff Gideon? And that's going to be the big kind of twist here, is that the armorer just set this whole thing up? Because there's been so many questions about her character throughout the years, and I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think it could be a big one, because Din has always gone to her. She acted like Bo-Katan was, you know, Mando Jesus. I mean, it's just kind of like there's too much here where I just could see her being the one.
I mean, they kind of allude to it. I saw a few people talking about this on Twitter as well. You know, they were saying, should I be paying attention to the armorer? Is there something I'm missing? And after I saw those, I was like, oh, what is she saying? I mean, the way they focus the camera on her, the pauses that she takes, and just the way that the music around her and just her actions, they're really fishy.
So I'll add on to this in two ways, because I actually rewatched the episode with that in mind, also having read it, like Zach said. Not only is she being weird, and people have pointed out that the horns on her helmet are very reminiscent of Death Watch, and she dodges the Death Watch question, where she's like, oh, the Death Watch doesn't exist anymore. And it's like, okay, so we finally got it mentioned. Exactly, right? Some people have part of the theory where it's like, remember all those dead Mandalorians at the end of season one of Mandalorian? And she's like, oh, the Empire killed them, but you don't see
that.
And she
somehow lives.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what if she was the one who killed them all for the Empire, and she's just kind of like somewhat assisting them? Although at the same time, it's like, why would you build a scrap metal piece of armor for Grogu then? That doesn't add up, right? So there's something.
They still want to protect Grogu for cloning.
It's like, oh, you're absolutely right. No, that is 100% true. Because, as we said, Moff Gideon has something he wants for sensitivity in his clones. Like, we all thought that was like, oh, they need him for Snoke, which I think is true. I think because they said, hey, where's Dr. Pershing? Like I think the idea was to have Grogu be like their subject for like Palpatine or just force sensitive clones in general. And then he got selfish and was like, no, I want this for me. But you're absolutely right. That would be her main reason. Now, oh my God, this ties into IG-12. We didn't even talk about IG-12 yet. People were complaining like, okay, Grogu has like a giant open hole in the middle of IG-12 that he can get shot at. I could imagine him getting shot in the little chest plate, even though his head's kind of more exposed, and that being like a plot point or something. Anyways, back to the matter at hand with this whole armor situation. Another character that people people have seemed to have forgotten about, because you don't really see what happens because the episode ends so abruptly on purpose, obviously. Axe Woves just disappears. Like, he tells them, hey guys, I'm gonna go get reinforcements. And it's like, okay, well, did he go to get reinforcements? Like, I don't doubt that he tried to, but there's gonna be a giant...
How did he get reinforcements? Because there's no communication from the planet surface to the fleet above. The only ship has been taken to take the injured up to the fleet, and unless, like, they moved, the armor is not gonna know where to go unless she has been working with Gideon. Then's like, yeah, I know where he's been hiding and I know what's been going on. So when he said he's gonna go up and call for reinforcements, it's like, homeboy, how?
Here's another point to that matter. Wouldn't the armor, it's literally in her name, want to go see the Great Forge, where all the armor is being made? Like, why would she just
they
drop out?
They could have sent one of the volunteers to take the injured.
Exactly.
So it's she knew they were gonna get ambushed, so she didn't want to be there.
Yeah, and she's probably sabotaging their ships before the fleet shows up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just hope someone contacts everyone in Mando's phone. Like, I don't know how, but I just... I'm sick. I am sick in the head, but I want next week to be just a nutty episode. I want to hear that Boba Fett theme music.
Oh, like, my God.
I want to see Tem. I want to see Tem get out of the Bacta tank and be like, I am ready to fight. And like,
the funniest thing, Zach,
and they just start going nuts.
Zach, the funniest thing is that's not even that out of the gate with how live action is gone. That could actually be something that happens. But also, yes, please, Mr. Temuera Morrison, I really hope you make an appearance.
And Sabine Wren, don't forget that she handed the Darksaber to Bo-Katan in the first place.
Exactly. Again, another instance of trying to reunite the factions, and it failed. But that's a story for another time. So I think we can easily go into what our predictions for the finale are. I think we're going to end on a dark note. I think the end is going to reveal that the Armorer has been against them this whole time, and she was just trying to rile up all of these Mandalorians so that she could make them surrender and become part of the Empire. And the ending scene is just this dread of like, we're prisoners.
Here's a prediction for you, going off of what I said earlier about repetitive storytelling. I think this reason why they didn't kill Din is because they want to lure Grogu, and that's exactly why they didn't kill him, because last season it was they captured Grogu, and then Din came running and they were like, oh crap, okay, we have to deal with this guy now. Except Gideon turned it around by getting this whole animosity thing going with the Darksaber, which surprised him at the beginning of this episode, where he's like, hey, they shouldn't be working together, that's not how that works. And it's like, I mean, that's what I've been saying all season. That was the twist of the season, is everyone expected Bo-Katan to be the antagonist, not the protagonist. So
yeah,
which ended up working in their favor, I think, story-wise. I think it would have been more unique to make Bo-Katan the antagonist, but I think it's a little bit more interesting to have her be like, okay, I'm gonna give this a second shot and prove that like I'm not like a complete total failure, basically. I mean, and Sam and Din pulls up with that Riz and gives her the whole like, oh, I love your honor and everything, and I'm like, woo. Din is like, he didn't say I don't he literally said I do not care about the Darksaber. I'm like, thank you, this is something we've been saying this whole time. And he just straight up says like, yeah, I literally have no interest in that weapon whatsoever, like, I just like you. And it's like,
quick interjection, when he said I serve you, Lady Kreese, most sexual non-sexual scene in this series, just gonna put that out there.
Yes, very, very intense right there.
But like, yeah, if this were a rated R or a rated R movie, like they'd be heading in somewhere private, if you know what I mean.
The helmets would be coming off.
we would have very dimly lit steamy scenes.
All I'm gonna say is my prediction for next week is just that I think they're gonna try to capture Grogu. I don't know if the season will end that way, but I do think there's gonna be a big fight scene with like a bunch of characters. Here's another thing, because I mentioned them, the New Republic didn't show up, but Carson Teva clearly has an interest in all this. I think he's gonna show up, and that's the fleet battle between the Mandalorians up in the sky is gonna be between them, and they're about to die, and then the X-Wings are gonna fly in like eagles in Lord of the Rings and save the day. Yeah, I'm calling it here now, folks. Those are my predictions.
Oh.
my predictions for next week. I mean, I feel like I've already like given some crazy off the wall, you know, armor's gonna be bad, Boba Fett's gonna show up and go crazy on all of them and be like, I am Mandalorian. Like, you know, he's gonna just go crazy. But I do think we're going back to Grogu and we're going back to Din. I think one thing for sure next week is I think Bo is going to be like, oh, I miss Din so much, because Gio's right. That Riz was just too much. It's like, your song hasn't been written yet. Ooh, okay. Oh,
so romantic. Whoa. What a simp.
Woo! Like, that is just, that is something. Like, I'm taking notes over here. But then I don't know. There is something that there's a part of me that really thinks, and it might be just the fan aspect of me, is that there is going to be some kind of New Republic involvement or even Jedi involvement somehow. Just because I do think, like, I don't think a Jedi appearing, but I do think maybe it's a post-credit scene or something. Is that, like, I don't know. I just don't. I think they're going to realize with Grogu's skill set, you know, maybe having that lightsaber might come in handy. You know, I know he has to be trained and stuff, but then again, like, you have Carson Teva. I mean, you have a lot of moving pieces on this board, and it's very exciting. But I do think that it's gonna come back down to Din and Grogu somehow. It's gonna just kind of boil down to that. There's gonna be so much other stuff probably happening in this episode, but this isn't a prediction, but this is just more of a hope for me, is that I just hope now we're heading into like this full stride with this New Republic storyline. I just don't want them to rush it, because I feel like we have ample time now to really flesh things out and maybe even go backwards a bit to, you know, resetting the stakes again a bit, where I don't want us to be like full fledged heading towards the Thrawn, big Thrawn war right away, just because I feel like there is so much we can continue to do with all these characters before we have to call in for this massive, you know, New Republic versus Imperial Remnant showdown. I think there's just so much time left that I just really hope they're not rushing towards that.
I have one final logical prediction, because this is something we haven't really gotten to see necessarily, but it happened at the end of last season. I think Bo-Katan is going to fight the Praetorian Guards of the Darksaber, because last season it was Mando versus Moff Gideon with the Darksaber and the Beskar Spear, which he doesn't have anymore. So I think, oh yeah, clearly the logical like lightsaber fight is going to be Darksaber versus Praetorian Guards. But that's like my logical predictions, like, that I'm trying to make based on the story. Anyways, Sarah, I want to hear your stuff. I'm like, I'm talking too much.
I have one hope. I know for a fact we're not going to get it, but I think that this would really swing it home with Bo's character, is I would just love some kind of flashback scene about how she became as radicalized as she is, because Bo was a radical Mandalorian. Like, her idea, she was an extremist for sure. So I guess I would love to see just like a more of trauma flashback into how Bo became so radicalized, like all the way back to her childhood. Like, even with Satine, like, she mentions her father, we see that her and Satine are sisters in the Clone Wars. Like, I just would love to see that tension about how her father tried to reunite the factions, he failed, and when he did fail, Satine took over, she also failed, and it was all left on Bo, who failed multiple times. And so she feels this pressure of, I can't fail again, I can't fail my family again. Like, I would love to see her just be like, I won't disappoint you, family, like some kind of meditation scene, and then just seeing that, like, I'm gonna do it this time. I really think that would develop her character in live action so well. I think a lot of people would really, it would also be a great segue into the animated shows, where she's like, what, where other people think, what are the, who are these people she's speaking of? I think it would be a great segue into those shows. Again, I know for a fact this is, that that's not gonna happen, but I think it would really provide some depth to the show. And I think that's all I have to say about this episode and the next episode.
Our song hasn't been finished yet though. It's still being written because we still have next week, which is the finale, and I can't wait.
Me neither, actually. I'm like, I have way more predictions that I don't even want to talk about because this would run on for like 50 years longer. But let's just say Star Wars Celebration kind of like filled a hole that I didn't know I had inside me. That was like, you can never have enough. You can never have enough Star Wars.
And we will be back to recap the season finale of season 3 of Mandalorian. But until then, thanks everyone for listening to another episode of This Is The Waycast. For more Star Wars content, head over to BoardWalkTimes.net and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at BoardWalkTimes. This Is The Waycast is a BoardWalkTimes production, produced and edited by me and Giovanni Delgadillo, and music by Kevin MacLeod.